Operation Nasty is underway. All plans are okey-dokey.
Have you arrived at the Kill Deer Ranch?
Affirmative.
Have you been observed?
No, Marshal. No one. But no one has been seen me.
That's good spy work, Misha. But we must keep the number one secret secret. No, you burn all the papers of identification and proceed as planned. But don't release the nasty rabbit until the appointed moment.
You can depend on me, Marshal. Over.
Oh, no.
Okay, are we rolling? Good. Forgotten Horrors Podcast, take one. Do the appropriate music. No, no, no. I said the appropriate music. That's more like it. This is Mike Price welcoming you to the Forgotten Horrors Podcast, a blatant exploitation of our new series of Forgotten Horrors movie books. It is my pleasure now to introduce John Woolley, without whom none of this would be possible. And now, the acclaimed author of Soul Soup for the Chickens and others too humorous to mention, John Woolley.
And for those listeners who we've picked up over the past couple of years, you know those are the mellifluous tones of Michael H. Price, author of, as he often puts at the beginning of his books, a great many things. And we'll be talking about some of those later on, especially, I should say, the co-originator with George Turner, of the Forgotten Horrors series of film books, which we've got a new one coming out. I'm proud to be a part of it. We'll talk about that later, too. Right now, let's talk about a film that I wonder if Arch Hall Sr. and James Landis were proud of, and that's The Nasty Rabbit.
Oh, boy.
You know, I did a little research on this. Actually, I did quite a little bit of research on it. And I keep running in, not often, but often enough, I run into reviews in which it's a mad, 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 mad world is mentioned in passing. Now, when Joey and Emily and I watched it to do this podcast, Joey mentioned, you know, this looks like a low-budget, mad, 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 mad world with a lot of excess, a lot of slapstick, a lot of overkill, a lot of comedic overkill. I guess if that's the correct term under the circumstances for this.
That's what my guitar playing comedian buddy Greg Jackson would call superfluous redundant overkill.
It was superfluous redundancy. That's right, and there was plenty of it too. And I'm just wondering, let me go ahead and give the quick synopsis for folks who haven't seen it. And it's available, Joey, is it available on YouTube, is that correct?
It's exclusively on YouTube.
All right, excellent. So it's on YouTube. It's a James Landis film, and it's another one of those pictures like, what, Deadwood 76, The Sadist, which features James Landis as the director, Arch Hall Sr., working as both William Waters as a scriptwriter, a nom de plume, and also working as an actor in the picture as Nicholas Meriwether. I believe I may have those two mixed
Nicholas
up.
Nicholas Meriwether. It's what an array of phony names
exactly.
That guy gave himself.
And then, of course, featuring Arch Hall Sr.'s son, Arch Hall Jr. And I have to say, as I was researching this, and I can't get this out of my mind, you know, we're not snarky on this show. We try very hard not to be snarky on the podcast. But someone identified Arch Hall Jr. as Cabbage Patch Elvis. And I just can't quite get that image out of my mind because it's so perfect.
He's got an exaggerated face.
Very much so.
Always has, always will. Hell of a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Splendid rock and roll guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
He understands exactly where he's coming from. He's got a face that Hollywood would not know what to do with.
A Cabbage Patch Elvis. It looks there like it belongs on a trading card, doesn't it? Yeah.
An amazing personality, a good actor given the right director.
Yes, absolutely.
Usually turned out to be James Landis.
It is today, yeah. On both ends of it, bad and good, yeah.
Yeah.
Landis got, of course, a great, everybody talks about the sadist. This is not bad. He's, you know, he's a rock and roll secret agent, and what it amounts to is that there's a Soviet submarine off some unnamed coast that is that has a rabbit that's been shot full of a certain kind of biological agent that is going to spread throughout the United States and kill everyone, and then have the Russians will come in. Thwarting this is Arch Hall Jr.'s character, which is Brick or what did we say? Was it Brick Hunter?
Brett Hunter.
Brett Hunter.
Yeah, secret agent. I mean, it's like this is right at the peak of the,
yes,
the cresting peak, right up to that, the run-up to the whole James Bond craze.
Absolutely. Dr. No had come out in 62, the year before.
Right, and this mm-hmm. film is pretty fresh out of the gate, given the timing of the general secret agent craze. There were what year was Johnny Rivers' song Secret Agent Man?
That's about 60. Well, it's based on, of course, the TV series, and what is that, 64, 65, right?
Yeah, so these are all coinciding in a very nice way, and it develops that somebody, in this case being Arch Hall Sr. and his co-writer, Jim Critchfield,
yes,
had this brilliant inspiration to do a slapstick comedy that works as a spy picture, but also goes into that not only the mad world syndrome, but also anticipates pictures like, Blake Edwards' The Party,
mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm,
What's New Pussycat?
Mm-hmm. Well, with a much lower budget. Because,
these exercises,
yeah,
in absurdity that I would put the Nasty Rabbit right up there with a lot of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's because, why? Because Landis knows what he's doing. He's not trying to do anything but generate. It's like a silent movie slapsticker.
Mm-hmm.
The exaggerations, the idea of girls flipping for Arch Hall Jr.'s rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
They literally flip.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's right. You're absolutely right. He obviously, they had a vision going here, and we, yep, must say also that viewed through the lens of 2017, that there's an awful lot of ethnic stereotyping in this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have the spies that are gathered together to thwart the Russians, include someone from West Germany. But they make sure it's West Germany, but there's also all those Nazi trappings. It looks like the producers, looks like the character from the Kenneth Mars, is Kenneth Mars from the producers?
There
looks like that character, or even Artie Johnson from Laugh-In, and I'm not sure. Laugh-In came a little bit later, but there's also a Japanese character. There's a Mexican character, and the Mexican character is played by a fellow whose last name is Vegas.
Now, Ray Vegas, yes.
Yeah, Ray Vegas. Now, the reason I mention this is because Pat and Lolly Vegas were the, along with Arch Hall Jr., are the primary musicians in this. Pat and Lolly Vegas were, they were all over the place. They were on Shindig. They were on, they did a bunch of different shows. They were a rock and roll duo. They were brothers. Pat and Lolly were brothers. And I'm just wondering, they later on became Redbone and became the first Native American band to have a top 10 record with Come and Get Your Love in the early 70s, 74. But they were Pat and Lolly Vegas before that, and I'm just wondering if the man who plays the Mexican character here is some, since his last name's Vegas, is some relation, perhaps their father or something.
Did
ever catch, did you?
I've never delved that deeply. But given the family bearings of the Hall organization.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like, why go out and hire a stock company when you've got one already built in?
Good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the other thing we want to talk about is Michael or Misha Tare, who is really, I think he steals the show. He is the he's the Russian agent who's sent in to release this rabbit with what they called farnacious bacteria, infected with farnacious bacteria, and he's responsible for taking him to the Continental Divide. This is the kind of picture this is, folks. And so it's like...
That's near the basement of the Alamo.
It is very close. Well, you know, I did a little research on Misha Tare, T-E-R-R. This is, I think, one of his only films, if not his only film, but he was a composer, and he was a music director, and he did, for instance, the music director for Bird Eye Gordon's King Dinosaur. He did the music for The Unearthly. Allegedly, this is his only acting credit, and, you know, he's really not bad in it.
The American Film Institute shows him, and I'd have to go rescreen the pictures to pin it down, but the American Film Institute shows him in some capacities on a couple of our Forgotten Horrors pictures, being The Devil's Hand.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, the other being an old favorite of mine, The Unearthly, the John Carradine picture.
Yes, sir, we were talking about that. He was the music director on The Unearthly. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but he actually shows a little bit of comedy timing, and he does some interesting work here. Now, he can kind of drive you nuts sometimes, but he's the closest thing to a, I don't want to say protagonist, but to, you know, to a main character that we can follow in this. Arch Hall Jr. is really almost has a secondary role when you really get down to it.
He's too busy. He's too busy making the music.
He is. He is.
And of course, posturing. Hall is a great posturer. That is not necessarily a benefit to one's acting career unless somebody's got a director riding herd on them that can focus that strange talent.
Right. Well, how do you define posturing then?
A lot of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of you consider the performance in The Sadist that Arch Jr. gives. He's mainly based poking out his chest and thrusting out his chin at people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And delivering his lines very persuasively, but that performance is so good you begin to wonder, it's like, is he really like this? Fortunately not, but it's a very effective performance. And I think Arch Jr. considered himself more an entertainer than an actor. And he's out there giving his imaginary concert audience a couple of thousand percent.
Well, and, you know, he reminds me of a kind of a way that Southern California kids acted in that time. I think of Mickey Dolenz. He's got some things that remind me of Mickey Dolenz.
Oh, and a similarly cartoonish presence.
Exactly, exactly. And he does a fine job. Now, the song that he sings to Sharon Riker, who I think this is her only film as well, she's the daughter of the ranch owner, is played by Hal Bogart, who we talked about earlier in Rat Fink a couple of podcasts ago, was in Rat Fink. He owns the ranch where a lot of this silliness takes place. And Sharon Riker is a very appealing young actress, but as far as we know, we don't know anything that she did anything else at all. A couple of other people, Laszlo Kovacs is actually in this picture. He was the second cameraman behind, who was the Vilmo Siegmund, right? Was the
Vilmo
other
Siegmund is like, boy, now where are you going to get talent like that on Poverty Row?
Well, Laszlo Kovacs plays a character called the Idiot, which would apply to several of the characters in the pictures. I'm not quite sure which one he is, which idiot he is. But also, you saw Richard Kiel.
Yeah.
who Arch Hall Sr. always said, as I've read, I never met Arch Hall Sr., but always said that he had discovered Richard Kiel as a bouncer in some Hollywood club. Had you ever heard that story?
No, I haven't. But, yeah. Richard became famous quite a bit later.
Yeah.
But he was already making an impression with the Hall family
mm-hmm.
troupe, that caveman at large picture called Ega.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and you look at Richard Kiel's performance there, and it's like, he's the best thing in this picture.
He's very good. Yeah. Like,
he's
yeah.
not necessarily the best thing about The Nasty Rabbit, but he certainly does stand out, and I don't mean just by immensity, physical
no.
immensity.
And they match him up with someone who has to have been a baggy pants comic on the burlesque circuit, this character Jack Little, that mm. they put him up against wearing his cowboy hat, and he comes about to Kiel's kneecap in this picture.
Yeah.
And I don't know much about Jack Little, but that's such a burlesque or vaudeville sounding name. You know, do you know anything about that character?
No,
about that
I
guy?
Don't, but I do know that Arch Hall Sr. came out of that strange subculture of Hollywood where the lines between vaudeville and burlesque mm-hmm. and filmmaking were just mm-hmm. incredibly blurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. And we should also say, speaking of bizarre and unusual, that the woman who is not billed under her own name, but who does a pretty doggone good job as a femme fatale in this, is actually Liz Renee.
Mm-hmm.
And Liz Renee, the same year that she made this picture, she made The Thrill Killers with Ray Dennis Steckler.
Right.
Both of those films were released the same year. She also made Deadwood 76, the Western, with Arch Jr. and Landis directing and Arch Sr. co-writing it. She did the Nasty Rabbit as Melissa Morgan. I have no idea why, but that was Liz Renee. Did you ever read her autobiography?
No, I've not encountered that.
I picked that up when I was in college, and it was kind of one of those things like reading Barbara Payton's I'm Not Ashamed, you know. It kind of gives you a look at really the flip side, the deep flip side of Hollywood. And she was a Mickey Cohen's moll for a long time.
Yeah.
And this was, I think, after she had won a Marilyn Monroe lookalike contest. And then she somehow parlayed all of this into a career in basically B pictures. I mean, Z pictures, really. And
sure.
Most people know her now, I guess, as being in one of the only John Waters films I could not get through, which was Desperate Living.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And she's.
Marilyn Monroe lookalike contest. What a. What a mixed blessing that would be to win.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No kidding. But
she was still at it up to an advanced age.
Yes, she was. And, you know, she's pretty good in The Nasty Rabbit. She holds her own in this, I think. Now, looking here at my notes, and Ray Vegas's character is named Pancho Gonzalez, which gives you pretty much an idea of the level of character names in this. And the spy, Misha Terre, or Terror, I don't know quite how to say quite what that was, but his name, he called himself Montana, Oklahoma. That was his nom de plume that he took in the picture. He was Montana, Oklahoma. He was a cowboy from Montana, Oklahoma. Named Laughing Moose O'Brien.
Oh. Crazy.
I know. There it is, and it's a wacky picture in every sense of the word. Joey and I were, I think by this time probably Emily, Joey's wife, was asleep, but Joey and I were sort of looking at each other like, you know, what's happening here on the screen. And after a while, you start seeing there is a little bit of an intelligence. Well, not a little bit of intelligence. James Landis, a very smart man. He was behind it. But, you know, the original title, obviously, as they show at the beginning, is Spies-A-Go-Go.
Spies-A-Go-Go, yeah, which was
a
title foredoomed to obsolescence before they could get it out of the camera.
Exactly, because the A-Go-Go thing, of course, went south on him. But it's a very interesting picture, and you can pick it up on, as Joey says, exclusively, it looks like, on YouTube. So
I think there's a budget label edition.
Is there?
On disc, and I'd have to look up the distributor, but it looks to be a fairly smartly packaged piece of work.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, excellent. Well, now, it's October, so it's Halloween, and we decided we might want to talk about if a family wants to get together and show a Halloween movie that's okay for the whole family but will still scare you. And I've got my own ideas, and I thought we might just give a couple of titles. Do you want to start?
I always retrench to William Castle when I'm looking for general interest Halloween pictures, and my favorite in that category is 13 Ghosts from 1960.
When you see 13 Ghosts, you'll be given a supernatural viewer like this, which will enable you to penetrate for the first time into the spirit world. It will let you see all 13 of our weird, wonderful, and wildly assorted ghosts.
Now, brace yourself as we take you across the threshold of our haunted mansion, where there's a ghost for everyone in the family. Father, mother, sister, brother. You'll be scared stiff, too, when you see what they see. 13 ghosts materializing in ectoplasmic color through the magic of Illusiono, the ghost viewer.
Not the remake. Basically a big budget splatter movie.
That's a different story, yeah.
But the original from 1960 is wonderfully put together in the sense that it has a very dedicated, united family in the midst of an economic crisis. It has a leading performance from one of the best kid actors in the business, Charles Herbert. And it's got a really nice self-parody role from Margaret Hamilton, caricaturing her Wicked Witch from The Wizard of Oz.
Well,
and a villain that you really love to hate.
Right, that's absolutely right. Well, I have to tell you a little personal story. I sat on the Desilu lot in early 60s. My cousin Scott McCarter, as I think you know and people know this in the podcast, was a child actor. Was in Summer Magic with Haley Mills and was Debbie Reynolds' youngest brother in Unsinkable Molly Brown, and everybody remembers him as the bully who comes to town in the Andy Griffith Show episode where he has to fight Opie, or Opie has to fight him, or they call One Punch Opie. Well, he was auditioning for the new Lucy show, and he took me with him to the Desilu lot, and I sat there with Flip, Mark, and Charles Herbert, and some of the other kids, and Charles Herbert was a monster kid. Even though he'd been in monster, like, you know, The Fly, and, of course, Colossus of New York, and, as you say, 13 Ghosts. And Charles Herbert and I talked about monster movies, sitting there on the Desilu lot on this bench, on this long bench, waiting for him to be interviewed. So I really love Charles Herbert. And, of course, he was in one of my very favorite pictures with my love of my teen years, Susan Gordon, The Boy and the Pirates, that Susan's dad, Bert, made. And I think that's a wonderful film to recommend. I would recommend two other William Castle films as well. One would be 13 Ghosts. That's the film that put my oldest son, Jonathan, off of horror movies forever. That one jump scare that everybody talks about with the crazy kind of hagged out servant that shows up all of a sudden.
House on Haunted Hill, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is that House on Haunted Hill? That's House on Haunted Hill, of course.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed. A lovely scare, and one that still works.
And it just sent my son screaming from the room when he was about 8 years old, and it turned him completely against the other. Is The Nightwalker, which I absolutely love. If I can indulge in a personal story, my friend Steve Olam whom we've talked about before, and we've talked about Hayden Rourke before. Right before I went to the service, we went to L.A. Steve had worked summers at Screen Gems in the makeup department, and we went out and had cocktails with Hayden Rourke and Jess Addison. I can't remember which Forgotten Horrors did I write about that in. Is that 7, maybe?
That's got to be volume 7, although it's kind of hard to keep track without a scorecard.
Well, telling you what, you can't tell one from another without a scorecard. but, you know, he signed a still for me from Nightwalker saying, "John, I hope I have the pleasure of being in your first horror film." And what a sweet man, and what a nice thing that was to do. So there is a scene in Nightwalker, a dream sequence that Barbara Stanwyck has, which involves Hayden Rourke, which I think is just one of the greatest things in the world. And I will also say, as long as we're talking about black and white creepy films, you could also do worse than The Body Snatcher with Henry Daniell and Boris Karloff from the Val Lewton unit at RKO in the 40s. What a wonderful, the last 5 minutes of that picture still give me goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Now, what have you got that, you know, Christmas is coming. What have you got that might be plugged on our show?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're just on the point of launching Forgotten Horrors Volume 9.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the index all in place, doing the tweaks on that. And the book building process has taken rather longer than I usually like on a book of this nature, but gosh, you know, we're nearing the end of the trail for Forgotten Horrors, and I don't really want to see it end.
Right.
Exactly. So we'll think of ways to keep the name going.
We will. We absolutely will. And in that, you have allowed me to write a reminiscence of my friend Bill Boyce from the Slime People. And we now, thanks to Joey doing all of the closed caption and everything that needed to be done before we could do it on Amazon, we now have on Amazon streaming services, is that correct? We have Bill Boyce, Money Actor, the little documentary he did on Bill Boyce, which is now available, just became available for download. So we've got that going. We've still got the Ralph Terry book. It's October. It's a World Series season. And Ralph Terry, the great pitcher for the Yankees in the early 60s, I was privileged to be able to do his book. And that's out there. It's called Right Down the Middle, the Ralph Terry Story. And baseball fans on your list, I believe that's a good one to get. I believe we'll be back next time around. Is there anything else that we need to talk about before we say sayonara?
I think we've covered this one pretty well.
I think we've covered it like a blanket. Thank you, Michael. We'll see you soon. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, there we go.
Share a love. make a wish that love will always be, and in love we'll stay.